Hi, thank you for listening to this special episode of Lift Every Voice. I'm really excited to share this episode because thanks to the podcast of the Center for American Progress, they have a program called Thinking Cap, I got the opportunity to sit down and talk with someone who has experienced profound injustice, the injustices of our mass incarceration, hyper-incarceration nation, and our failed drug policies, the failed war on drugs. It was incredible to sit down with him and have a discussion before a live audience about these issues and more. In this episode, you're going to hear the story of justice advocate Weldon Angelos in his own words. Weldon was sentenced to a 55-year mandatory minimum sentence for marijuana sales and had his sentence reduced after a major public campaign drawing attention to the injustice of his case. Weldon is now an advocate and activist for people under similar circumstances who are still serving draconian sentences behind bars for drug offenses because, unfortunately, in America, most people who don't get national campaigns, celebrities involved, who don't have people speaking out for them, end up just wallowing in jail under unjust sentences that do not reflect the greatness of who we are and who we must be if we're going to live up to our ideals as a country. So in this episode, you'll hear us talk about the failed war on drugs, which we know has really been a war on people. I hope this conversation inspires you to lift your voice in the cause for justice, and I thank you for listening, as always.
Welcome to Thinking Cap.
Woo! Yay! And I'm Michelle Juwando. Hi.
Hi, Michelle.
I'm Igor Volsky, and welcome to Thinking Igor. Cap Pod Live. Woo! Michelle, today we are talking about marijuana.
This is a very serious topic because there are more than 500,000 people who are arrested who use marijuana every year. People of color are four times as likely to be arrested, even though we see usage rates being the same. We know that there's a shift in attitudes nationwide. We see that in states and cities, particularly on the question of legalization. But I think what we're seeing is a momentum, finally, on the federal side. We saw earlier that Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer filed the Marijuana Freedom and Opportunity Act, which would decriminalize marijuana at the federal level. But we have to be very honest that this is a very difficult question. It's a difficult issue, and there are hurdles in front of us, particularly with this administration, with this attorney general, moving aggressively to enforce laws against its usage. And so there's also a real question about the political will of lawmakers, some who maybe aren't as forward-thinking as others. So we're going to talk about all of that today.
And today, Michelle, we are joined by two guests who have really been leading on this issue. On my right is a man who needs no introduction, from my home state of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Senator Cory Booker. Woo. The senator is also the chief author of the Marijuana Justice Act. It is one of the first pieces of legislation proposing new solutions for outdated marijuana laws. And next to him is Weldon Angelos, a Woo! Justice reform advocate. Weldon has experienced firsthand the harsh consequences of mandatory minimum sentences around marijuana, and he has a new documentary coming out soon called Weldon that tracks his story. Weldon, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having Woo! Me.
So I come from the Central Ward of Newark, where I've lived for the last 20 plus years. One of the women who was a great leader in the neighborhood I still live in, low-income neighborhood woman from the Fifth Florida Projects, really taught me that hope doesn't exist in an abstract. Hope is the active conviction that despair will not have the last word.
That's right.
And no matter what the obstacles, no matter what the odds, she was always fighting.
Well, Senator, let me turn to the topic at hand, and that is, of course, marijuana. I saw that you have never smoked marijuana, but I will overlook that and ask this question anyway. Public opinions have clearly been shifting. We have a new cap poll that shows 68% of Americans support legalization. You've seen 30 states either decriminalize or legalize. Why do you think there's still such opposition? For instance, what do you hear when you talk to senators about your act? And do you think, knowing what we know about how criminalization has really devastated communities of color, that there's a racial component still to ending the treatment of marijuana?
Well, you know, when I put forward my bill, it caused a lot of stir. A lot of my colleagues pulled me aside. I'll never forget when a Republican colleague of mine just whispered to me on the Senate floor, I just think it's unjust, you know, to see a college kid have his career ruined because he has a marijuana conviction. And I'm just like, a college kid, any person.
Who are these
person,
college kids?
Any that, yeah. person that has it. And by the way, we've had de facto legalized marijuana for a long time. I mean, I went to Stanford University. There was no FBI raids on marijuana usage there. There were no consequences. People flaunted the law with humor, and it was funny, ha-ha. But in the community that I live in, it's not a joke. This is destroying people's lives. People are getting lifetime sentences. And what I mean by that is once you're put in handcuffs, once you have that arrest record, once you get a felony conviction for marijuana possession, you can't get business licenses in many states. You can't get Pell Grants. You can't get food stamps. I mean, you have in some states like Florida, you lose your voting rights for life for doing things that two of the last three presidents admitted to doing. And so, to me, this isn't a joke. And somebody who's just worried about that college kid, to me, that is wrong and unjust. We have this idea of equal justice under the law. But we have two entirely different justice systems for different people in different stations in the United States of America. And so I think there is this sympathy for it in the Senate, this empathy for certain people, but there's no sense of urgency, which is what we need in the United States Senate. I'm so
And is the reason why we're not seeing a sense of urgency is because it's not having the kind of impacts on those college kids, the college kids you went with to Stanford, for instance, that they're not the ones being impacted, and thus there is no urgency.
Yeah, senators' children are very unlikely to get marijuana charges.
Yes.
Okay, and, you know, but I live in a community, I challenged somebody to walk with me once, and every black male that we met, and I live in a majority black community, every single black male that we met has been arrested for something. And we know, as you were saying, there's no difference between marijuana usage and marijuana dealing, actually, right, between blacks and whites. Who people in Stanford buy their pot from? There's no difference along racial lines for usage or dealing. But African Americans are almost four times more likely to be arrested for it. Latinos twice as likely to be arrested for it. And so this is a part of a war on drugs, which has you know, Michelle Alexander calls it the new Jim Crow. It has disproportionately affected poor people, vulnerable communities, minorities, and really helped to devastate places like the one in which I live, which, you know, the Vanderbilt University said we would have about 20% less poverty in America if we had incarceration rates the same as our industrial peers.
So, well, then I want to turn to you because the senator has mentioned that there are people whose lives are incredibly impacted, and you are one of those people that, due to mandatory minimum sentencing, you were sentenced to 55 years for the sale of two relatively small amounts of marijuana. And I think your story, you know, I'm fortunate that I now know a little bit more about your story. But why don't you share with us a little bit about why we've asked you to come and join us today?
Well, I was directly impacted by our marijuana laws. As a young teenager, I had an opportunity to get in the music industry. I was working with the likes of Snoop Dogg and Tupac Shakur's recording group. But I come from a very poor background, and so when I was waiting for my music ventures to stabilize, I was selling small amounts of marijuana on the side to get me through. And you know, I made a music video with Snoop Dogg called "A Little More Dope to Smoke," mm-hmm. and we made a video to it. And you can imagine what the video was like. So you know, I was living in Salt Lake City, and that kind of caught the attention of authorities in Utah, not used to, you know, this gangster rap music stuff, you know, and we were kind of like, it was kind of in their face, but, you know, marijuana was like in our culture, in the hip hop culture. So they targeted me, they sent a confidential informant after me and they tried to get me to sell large quantities of other drugs. I said no. So they end up getting roughly $900 worth of marijuana with three controlled buys. And that triggered a 55-year mandatory minimum sentence.
So you are obviously not 55, and you have not served that full sentence. But as a part of your connection and your release, you had a lot of people who were speaking up on your behalf. So tell us a little bit about that connection between the sentencing, people who were standing up on your behalf, and what that experience was like, especially the moment where you heard 55 years.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to have a judge, a very conservative judge, a George W. Bush appointee, who looked at this sentence. He was a young judge. He only been on the bench 2.5 years, and he was known for against the Miranda rule. He was for the death penalty, you know, the most tough on crime judge you can get. And when he seen my case and the sentence, you know, he balked at it. He didn't want to do it. He called the sentence unjust, cruel, and irrational, and called on the president to commute my sentence. And he actually resigned from the bench because of my case. So with his support and other folks I worked with in the entertainment industry and senators, like Senator Mike Lee and a whole coalition of people, the unlikely allies that we call it, came together to lobby for my release.
What is your story for young people who hear your story? Because quite frankly, there are probably many of us, and if we're all honest, do we know someone who's currently incarcerated or has been arrested? Let me see a show of hands. If you know someone who's ever been arrested or incarcerated, caught up in the criminal justice system. So that's almost everybody in this room. What do you tell other Weldon Angelos? How do you stay positive? How do you keep the attitude that you have? And how do we break down these questions around this criminal justice system and seeing the brokenness of the system the way it currently exists?
Yeah, well, it's tough to stay positive, especially in this current climate with the attorney general we have and, you know, the president. So it's tough. And I work with a lot of people who are incarcerated and I'm trying to get them out. But luckily we have folks like Senator Booker who are actually trying to do something about it and not just talking about it. And so, I mean, it's tough. I mean, people are depressed. People are serving decades, and some of them have life sentences for small drug offenses and some for marijuana. I actually was in there with a guy who got 22 years for running a state-licensed medical marijuana dispensary. The George W. Bush administration decided to prosecute him, and he's been sitting there for 10 years for following state law.
Mm. Well, Senator, let me ask you about that. People in this country who are currently sitting in jail for marijuana charges. As I mentioned, cities across the country have really liberalized their marijuana laws. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, New York, right here in D.C. And in Seattle, where marijuana is legal, Mayor Jenny Durkan has led the effort to vacate marijuana convictions altogether. Here is what she argues.
For too many who call Seattle a home, a misdemeanor marijuana conviction or charge created barriers to opportunity, to good jobs, to housing, to credit, and to education, and it disproportionately targeted communities of color. By asking the Seattle Municipal Court to vacate those convictions, I think we take a step closer to having a more just society and a brighter future for our neighbors, and to putting our progressive values into action.
Senator, that is also a key part of your bill. Talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a real chip on my shoulder for all these people who are like, hey, let's legalize marijuana, and now it's suddenly legal, but yet there are these disproportionately impacted communities that are carrying that life sentence I expressed before. And so to say that you're about legalizing marijuana, and if you don't say in your next breath, and we should expunge the records of those people who've been caught up in this unjust persecution, to me, you're not addressing the the shameful past of this country. And so my legislation goes even further than that. It's also about expunging, but it's also about all this tax revenue coming. Because remember, marijuana arrests were not diffused throughout the United States of America. They were concentrated in certain communities, in certain neighborhoods, where you're taking people away from their families, their children are suffering now. You're lowering the economic well-being of entire communities. And so all of these tax receipts that are coming in now, we should be reinvesting in those communities that have been disproportionately impacted, reinvesting in education programs, job training programs, drug treatment programs, to try to get restorative justice back there. And then the other thing my bill does is it incentivizes states to change their marijuana laws if they've been disproportionately impacting communities through its enforcement, creates a carrot and a stick, mind you, and if they don't. We've got to be about restorative justice, and we've got to understand that since the 1960s and 70s, we've been engaging in a war on drugs, which has really been a war on people, and has severely damaged communities in ways that have caused serious, serious harm that we should be redressing.
So I want to ask this question to you, Weldon, and then Senator Booker, if you could address it. So, you know, we're having this conversation about the war on marijuana specifically, but we can't separate that from this broader conversation that we're having nationwide about the criminal justice system. Weldon, you were caught up in a system directly connected to mandatory minimum sentencing, and how many people think how harsh a system that is. You leave no space for thought or logical sentencing. And a few months ago, Senator, we were able to have a bipartisan coalition really thinking about sentencing reform. So, Weldon, I think my question to you first is, how do you address, and what do you think are the steps that we should take to really break down and look at the entire system as a whole?
Yeah, well, we definitely need to get rid of mandatory minimums. I think that would be a good place to start. And as far as ending the war on drugs, I think ending marijuana prohibition is the first step in finally ending the destructive and wasteful war.
And then, Senator, can I ask you, you know, we had this bipartisan coalition on sentencing. You saw momentum at the federal level. You saw an attorney general under Eric Holder put out a number of edicts to his prosecutors across the country, and we've seen a major rollback in the last 18 months. Where are we today?
Well, first of all, I just want to attack the premise of your question, not attack it, support it.
take it out.
Take it on.
Take
I want to take
out.
On the premise
I'm
of your
listening.
Question. Because most Americans have no clue what is going on in our names every single day in our criminal. Remember, it's the state versus or the people versus we are the people. And we've allowed this nation that professes to be the nation of freedom and justice to be the most incarcerating nation on the planet Earth. One out of every three incarcerated women on the planet Earth are in the United States of America. And we're only 4 to 5% of the globe's population. One third and one fourth of all the incarcerated people on the planet Earth are right here in the United States of America. And what we do to people in prisons is despicable. We do what other countries call human rights violations when you put children in solitary confinement, even before they've been convicted of anything. Because you look at other countries, you can tell a lot. You can tell the truth of a nation by looking at its prison. Some countries, they imprison the media. Some countries imprison their political opponents. We imprison the most vulnerable people in our population, poor people, mentally ill people, drug-addicted people, overwhelmingly women who have been sexually assaulted. 86% of the women that were incarcerated are survivors of sexual trauma. That's who's filling our prisons and jails. And we shove them in environments and do things to them that are inhumane. We shackle pregnant women in this country who are giving birth. I walked in and sat in a female facility, and they talked to me about having their children separated from them, and they're going in for nonviolent drug offenses. Now their kids are in two or three different homes or in foster homes, and they have to scrape together dollars because we charge usury rates. Remember, the prison industrial complex is a big business for people. And so just to charge usury rates to make phone calls to their children mean that they couldn't even afford sanitary products that are not provided for them, tampons and pads. What we do, I could go on in our criminal justice system, is outrageous. And what we've been doing, remember, the criminal justice system has gone up about 800% on the federal level since the 1980s alone, expanding these bureaucracies. And so when you say that this is not just a marijuana issue, it's not just a marijuana issue.
Right.
We're getting to a point now where we're approaching over 70 million American adults have a criminal justice history an arrest record. Think about it, that's almost one-third of all the adults in our country. We are criminalizing our society. And so this is a stunning problem. And I one of the reasons I came to Washington, D.C. as a senator, you know, I was doing a lot of good as a mayor of the city of Newark, helping to transform our city. But one of the main reasons I came to Washington was this justice issue, to attack what I consider a cancer on the soul of our country. And so, yeah, we have a bipartisan bill that came out of, with Senator Grassley supporting, came out of the Judiciary Committee. I'm going to be the first person to say it's a step in the right direction. It doesn't get us to the promised land. It's just one step towards it. It needs to go a lot further. But at least it had some basic sentencing reform to correct some obvious ills. The powder crack cocaine disparity was 100 to 1 in this country, which is just based on fear, ignorance, no science, no data, 100 to 1. And there are people who are rotting in prison based upon that disparity. Now, they changed it, not based on science, based on a negotiation. This is a true story that happened in the Senate gym. Got down to
all the best deals are cut.
I was still there when this happened.
One senator spotting another, and then the deals made.
Yeah, we didn't really believe it, and then they came back to the staff and they were like, "Let me tell you, what we're going to do.
We're going to change it to 18 to 1, based on nothing but a gym negotiation."
That's right.
And now there are people who come into prison and leave prison based on the 18 to 1, while folks. Because they didn't make it retroactive. Well, other folks who are on the 100 to 1 just sit there and watch these people come in and out because they didn't make it retroactive. So at least our bill corrects ills like that, which would liberate thousands of people. But you mentioned Jeff Sessions, which is one of the reasons I broke with Senate tradition.
Please talk about Jeff Sessions, please.
which is one of the reasons I broke with Senate tradition to do everything I could. And even if I couldn't stop him, I wanted to be on the record. Because what he's doing right now, failing to even defend the pre-existing conditions.
That's right.
People, we're about to lose as a country what even Republicans 70-80% say we should have, which means, by the way, how many people in this room have a pre-existing condition? I damn well believe most of the folks in here
All the women, raise your hands.
Because being a woman, in some cases, was a pre-existing
yes.
condition. So I wish that this was not just a podcast and people could see what I just saw with all these hands going up. That's Jeff Sessions for you. Won't even defend that part of Obamacare. And he was one of the main people that stopped our bipartisan legislation from moving forward. And then he became the attorney general. And I just got asked a question in an interview on CNN that almost I had to, sometimes you just got to breathe. You know, if you're like me, you got to praise Jesus a little
That's
bit
right.
more. Give me strength.
Keep me near the
Because
cross.
The person asked me the question, they played a clip of Jared Kushner saying, well, the reason why we can't get sentencing reform is Congress. Congress won't put it. So we're just going to try to deal with the watered down version of prison reform. I'm like, wait a minute. If your father-in-law came out and said, I will support that Senate bipartisan bill, which if Mitch McConnell would give it a vote, it would get over 60 votes right now.
That's right.
It would win in the House if it got a vote.
Oh, you mean you were trying to challenge him to tell the truth? Oh, okay.
Yes. Yes. So if Jared shouldn't be criticizing Congress, criticize your father-in-law and Jeff Sessions, who are the real reason we're not getting more bold criminal justice reform in the United States of America.
Well, Senator and Weldon, Michelle and I look out at this room and we see not only a great and beautiful audience, but we see a room full of action takers. What can all of us do to join this movement, to help advance bills like yours and to begin solving this problem?
Weldon, you
go
it
first.
Well,
you're the senator.
I'm going to show your video, so we want your docu. So what would you say first?
I mean, I would vote for candidates that are in favor of justice reform. That's the most
All
important
right.
thing you can do.
So we did not get women's right to vote in this country because a bunch of senators sat around and said, you know what, it's about time those women have some of their right to vote. It wasn't civil rights. It wasn't Strom Thurmond didn't sit there and say, yep, I think those Negro people should have some. No. Change does not come from Washington. It comes to Washington by activists who raise the moral imagination of this country, who challenge the consciousness. Who disturb comfortable people. We are in a country where we can't get done with the majority of people. When you ask them, they're like, yeah, I believe we should have common sense gun safety. Yeah, I believe we should have that health care is a right. Yeah, I believe we should have that nobody in this country should work a full-time job and live in poverty. These people want to say these are radical progressive ideas. They're not. They're the majority held view in this country. But nothing changes. Because we get caught in what I call a state of sedentary agitation and don't understand. You get so upset, you don't get up and do something about it. And don't understand the opposite of justice is often not injustice, it's inaction, it's apathy, and it's indifference. And so if we, I always tell people this, and this is a day, forgive me, I'm very raw today, I believe that before you tell me about your religion, first show it to me in how you treat other people.
That's right.
And I'm gonna tell you right now, we have a civic gospel. All of us wanna put our hands on our hearts and swear an oath to the ideals of liberty and justice for all, but what are we willing to do with it? We're not gonna be asked to storm beaches in Normandy. We're not gonna be asked to do freedom rides where we're gonna get beaten. Heck, we're not gonna be asked to go, you tell people to vote. There was a time, you know, Goodman, Cheney, Schwerner were dying trying to register for folks to vote. No. But this is a moral moment in America. I've never in my lifetime seen a more powerful moral moment, not a partisan moment, a moral moment.
That's right.
Where the overwhelming majority of this country believes in things, but it's not happening. And it's not happening because we're not demanded. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It was true when Frederick Douglass said it, and it's true today. Those who profess to favor freedom yet deprecate agitation are those who want the crops without the tilling of the soil, those who want rain without the thunder and the lightning. Thus saith Frederick Douglass, and it is still true now. And so if you want change, remember those 10 two-letter words. If it is to be, it is up to me. Ask what you are doing. What more could you be doing? It's not just voting. It's getting your friends to vote. Those people who are sitting on the sidelines and thinking this democracy is a spectator sport, getting them to vote. It's about posting, not trivialities, about your life. You know, I do care what you had for dinner.
Sometimes, you know, you want to mix it up a little bit, maybe.
Mix it up a little bit. Sure, I put my vegan food up there, out there. But also,
nobody wants to see the vegan food.
Nobody wants to see the vegan food. If you want to see what corporate industrial animal agriculture is doing to this country.
It's a different show.
I'm sorry.
It's a different show. We'll have you
next
back.
Next podcast. Yes.
The erosion of small family farmers. Because devastation of CAFOs. Okay, I won't put my vegan food up as much anymore. Do something. Don't underestimate your power. Alice Walker told us about the trap that the most common way people give up their power is not realizing they have it in the first place. Use your power. Bring the change to Washington.
All right. I love the raw Cory Booker. Let me just say that. Well then, Angelos. Thank you, my brother, for telling and sharing your story and being open to share your story, because not everybody.
All right, Walden Angelos, Senator Cory Booker, thank you so much for joining us on Thinking Cap.
Thank you,
thank
guys.
Thank you all for joining us. Woo!